very pleased to introduce this morning our convocation speaker, Dr. Eugene Lindsay, who is Executive Director of the Board for Social Ministry Services of the Synod. He certainly comes to us with a rich and varied background in a number of fields, from administration to education to government, as well as theology, of course. He's had opportunity to testify before numerous congressional committees, especially in the area of education. He has been meeting some of his former students here this morning from Concordia St. Paul, where he served as professor of government. He has helped organize Lutherans for Life. As a matter of fact, was its first executive secretary. He has served as chairman of the Academic Policies Committee of a higher education consortium for urban affairs, a consortium which included some 14 colleges and universities, and I could go on. As chairman of the Committee of Social Concerns of the CTCR of the Synod, he has been instrumental in guiding policy statements on capital punishment, euthanasia, human sexuality. He began his present office with the and duty with the Board of Social Ministry Services back in '82, and since that time has seen the ministry grow through the call of need in a wide range of social and spiritual applications. He's chairman of the Human Care Planning Unit. The Board for Social Ministry Services has a blueprint out and a revised blueprint for the decade ahead, and a great statement on theology of, goal of social ministry. Presently serving on the Lutheran Resource Commission, Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Services, Lutheran World Relief. What else should I all mention? Who knows? His topic today, the working relationship between social ministry and world mission, which is indeed a front burner item, and we ask you to then welcome Dr. Lindsay.
Thank you, Professor Kapitsky, for saying all those nice things. I always enjoy hearing some of those things. I wasn't aware that I'd been doing all those things. Nonetheless, let me begin by saying that I have recently come back from a tour of Asia where I represented the Board of Directors of Lutheran World Relief and where we monitored programs and projects in which Lutheran World Relief was involved, which also gave me an opportunity to see some of the program activities carried on by the Board for World Missions in which we participate and which we share with them, a kind of a common concern that strengthens the hand of missionaries engaged in missionary activities. As a matter of fact, in my mail yesterday was a delightful little letter from the Reverend D.E. Treglo in the Philippines. I must tell you a funny little story. After I was about ready to come home, I packed up some of the clothes that I had because I felt maybe from what I had seen there were people there who needed them worse than I did. So I put them in a plastic bag and gave them to Pastor Treglo and said, here, make some use of it. He writes me, these clothes went to three different families of the Calagans and were deeply appreciated. He's very grateful, and these three families invite me back anytime. I'm in General Santos in Mindanao in the Philippines. So, in a sense, that gets me off and gets me running in a discussion of the relationship, the working relationship between what we do in social ministry and world missions. We, incidentally, had one bizarre event after another that occurred on our trip. General Santos is clear down at the very tail end of Mindanao. The plane only comes in twice a week. The plane was due in at 7:15. It came in at 11:30 in the morning. We were due to get to Manila for meetings in the afternoon. We never did get there until 6:30 that evening. And when I turned on the TV in the hotel room there, what I heard, first of all, was the story of the tremendous disaster in San Francisco, the earthquake and the collapse of the freeways, the terrible destruction. The Manila television reported between 600 and 800 deaths. Now, that was inflated considerably beyond what actually occurred. But I thought at once about the work that we do in response to disasters. We are part of a program with the ELCA called ILDR, Inter-Lutheran Disaster Response. And I needed to get home as quickly as possible to make sure that we were in place and functioning responsibly in that particular disaster. Obviously, we were. We have competent people on our staff who respond quickly and immediately, as we have to other disasters. All of the major disasters in this country this year has seen a Lutheran presence and a very strong LCMS presence immediately and on the scenes. One of the features of our common efforts, both domestically as well as in foreign fields, is response to disasters. We have a working agreement with the Red Cross, the International Red Cross, that says that when a disaster occurs, while the Red Cross is the official government agency that is to respond physically to the needs of people, the Lutherans have priority in responding to the spiritual needs of people, to the trauma that occurs, the suffering, the agony, the anguish that people have. And so when there is a disaster, through our inter-Lutheran disaster response, we can walk right on the scene, irrespective of what the lines may be, irrespective of what the police may say, because we have the authorization from the Red Cross to be there to comfort people in those needs, in their spiritual concerns. It's one of the blessings of our program of recent vintage. Perhaps this is the time in which I explain to you the way in which we break out social ministry activities that relate here to these kinds of needs of people. There are really four major categories of functions. The first is in cooperative efforts with Lutheran World Relief Incorporated in New York. The ELCA and the LCMS are both the primary members and supporters of Lutheran World Relief. Lutheran World Relief functions only internationally. It has nothing to do with programs domestically. When domestic issues arise, at that point, LCMS World Relief both provides services to congregations engaged in response to human needs, but also provides spiritual assistance to pastors and congregations who try to respond to the needs that people have. So, first of all, international, then domestic projects, then close cooperation with the Board for World Missions. And that's mostly what I'm here to talk with you about today. The fourth I've already referred to, and that's questions relevant to disaster response. Now, in the World Mission Institute bulletin that Professor Kopetsky prepares and that was distributed in November, the points that he makes from the Luzon, both from Luzon 2, which was held in Manila, as well as from Luzon 1, are points of importance for us and that undergird the way in which we do our task. He says the repeated call for integrity, that is, the need for the gospel to be lived before the world, not simply announced to the world, is focal to what that conference was about. And that really is pretty much a guiding thesis in our work in social ministry as well. The point that he makes is that the LCMS must continue to preach and teach law and gospel, sin and grace, the sacraments as the visible word. We must stress the pure gospel with its focus on objective justification, from which objective justification and the assurance of salvation and preservation in the faith flow, and from which faith's fruits issue. It's particularly that last phrase that I underlined when I read this bulletin, and I said that's really, again, part of what drives our efforts. Now, I've brought with me, as I have frequently when I've talked to Professor Kopetsky's classes, the blueprint for the decade ahead. This document was prepared several years ago and has now gone through several conventions. It's still not widely known, but I certainly want each one of you to have a copy of it, because what it does is to lay the theological foundation for our efforts. In the minds of many, social ministry is one of those nice things that you get around to after you've done everything else, all of the important things. But what the document does is to lay a foundation, a theological foundation, which I hope that you will give attention to both as students and ultimately also in your ministry and in your congregations. Because while we have made this available to congregations, it is still not widely known. It begins the theology of social ministry with a very simple statement. It says, what we do grows out of what we believe, and our actions are an expression of our faith, as properly they should be. Beyond that, I trust that you will want to examine the theology itself, the scriptural references, and the references in the Lutheran confessions, which really serve as our baseline for the work that we do, whether it is in cooperation with world missions or in response to human needs here. But let me share something else with you in the blueprint, and that is our mission statement. Today, no matter what the nature of a program or activity or corporation is, one is concerned about a clear perception of what the mission is of that organization. And it's important, I believe, also that congregations develop an understanding of their mission. What are we here to do? What are we here for? Not only our identity, but our purpose becomes important. And so we also have articulated our definition of our mission. Let me read it to you. The mission of the church in social ministry is responding to God's love in Christ by expressing and demonstrating his love and compassion in meeting human need. We're saying in very simple language, what are we to do? We are to do what Jesus did. He sets us an example. What was the nature of his ministry? Well, certainly it was preaching and teaching. It was also healing and assisting people in need. And he responded to every kind of human need that one can imagine, whether it's demonic possession, or whether it was death, or whether it was illness, or whether it was hunger. All of these were issues to which he responded. They then become the model, the goal, if you will, the perception of what the church's mission is in social ministry. And I'll lay that before you, because in many cases in congregations today, one certainly recognizes the importance of worship, and the importance of evangelism, and the importance of teaching. But there are times when we forget the importance of, say, fellowship and service, particularly service. It's an interesting thing that in the New Testament, the word for saving and the word for healing is one and the same. Now, if you think about the implications of that, that healing and saving are the same word and interchangeable in the language, though perhaps not always precisely the same in context, it's something well worth considering when one talks about what the task of ministry is in a congregation and what your role as ministers will be in congregations. If your role is one of saving, certainly that's done through the proclamation of the gospel. If it is one of healing, certainly the gospel is healing, but there may be other elements in healing as well. And so for that reason, let me take just a moment at this point to put into your hands the blueprint for the decade ahead. If some of you will give me a little help, we can distribute these things to you, and they're yours to keep. This is not something I want to dwell on today. It's something that I want you to take with you. Perhaps you can use it in some of your studies, maybe even in papers that you have to develop, because I think it is not just a discussion of mission and objectives and theology, but also a statement of how one gets these things done, what become the objectives, the general objectives of this kind of ministry. Beyond that, though, let me turn to the topic for which I'm here primarily, and that is the coordinated efforts between World Relief and social ministry services. In the nature of our activities, social ministry involves World Relief, but it also involves refugee work, because Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Services, as well as Lutheran World Relief, is part of the responsibility of social ministry services. Now, in my travels abroad, I had the opportunity to look in on several closed refugee camps, one on the Thai-Cambodian border in a camp called Khao Yai Dong, in which Lutheran World Relief was responsible for providing assistance both medically and institutionally for education in that camp. There were 14,000 people in that camp. There were 2,700 kids in school, and there were some 900 youngsters in a high school program. And they're really without resources. They're people without a homeland. They really can't go back to Cambodia from which they came. They're not welcome there. The Thai government doesn't want them. But we reach into that camp by providing resources for purposes of medical missions and also for purposes of education. The way that's done is that a print shop has been organized in that closed camp, and what we have done has been to supply mimeograph stencils that the print shop uses to prepare teaching materials that are used in the schools for these 2,700 youngsters. And part of that material also has Lutheran resource materials for teaching about Jesus Christ distributed to the kids who are in that camp. Now, sometimes it is not always immediately clear just how these things work. And you say, what is Lutheran World Relief doing in a camp on a Cambodian border that is a closed camp for refugees? Much the same was true in the closed camp in Hong Kong for refugees who are North Vietnamese boat people and who also can't go home again. Current issue of U.S. News and World Report recites the fact that the policy of the United States government is one that would encourage these people to go back home to North Vietnam. But if you talk to them directly, they will say, we would rather die than to go back to North Vietnam. So ultimately, some solution needs to be found for these homeless people. And once again, we reach out through Lutheran World Relief and Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Services and through some of the people in the international the church in Hong Kong to be of assistance to these people in need. And once again, there is religious instruction in that camp. And there also are some very sad situations in a camp such as that for which we as a society need to provide some answers. I think particularly of a concern that I have for adolescent teenagers who are without parents who are in a camp like that because they're North Vietnamese. And because the policy of the U.S. is, if they are North Vietnamese, they're not welcome in the U.S. But 12-year-old teenagers really had nothing ever to do with the war in Vietnam. And some exceptions need to be found to the policies that are involved. And part of what we do is to express our love and concern for these people by finding some solutions to their problem so that they both understand what the nature of our motivation is and also that it's not a question only of motivation but also of action. In the traveling that I did, particularly as it relates to our World Relief missions and our activities, every occasion that I had to meet with people gave me an opportunity to witness. And it's not all that difficult, because it's very easy to ask when you're with a group of tribals or with a voluntary agency, no matter where, whether it's in India or Thailand, always to say, do you know why we're here? Frequently the answer was, because you are a fine partner agency. That always gave me the chance to say, no, I don't think that you understand. I'm here because the Lord loves me, because he has redeemed me, because I love him, and I share that love with him by sharing it with you. That's not very profound, it's not very difficult, but it's part of our witness, part of a way in which we reach into the lives of people. And I'll always remember, in the highlands and the mountains in southern Mindanao, a chief who came up to me afterwards, about an hour after I'd been there and talked with other people and we'd had some lunch. And he said, I'm sure glad you talked about him through an interpreter. And I said, why did you say that? He said, well, I understand why you have come. Other people have come to us before and said nice things, and then they stole our lands. And I said, wow, what a marvelous opportunity to make the case as to really why we are there and what we hope to accomplish. I have brought with me also some reports on programs that we carry out jointly with the Board for Missions. I want to distribute those. I want you to have these. This is some very specific detail regarding program activities. I want to review some of these briefly with you because we've initiated a new program, about 4 years ago. We implemented it 3 years ago, and it's working very well. This is a cooperative venture between the Board for World Missions and the Board for Social Ministry Services. It's that third category to which I referred, dollars that we allocate in cooperation with the Board for Missions to joint venture programs involving the BSMS and the BFS. Annually, we allocate about $500,000, you know, plus or minus. Our budget for the current year is $450,000. We've almost already used that up. There will be supplements. But the net effect of it is that $500,000 a year goes from Social Ministry Services to our World Relief Desk to joint ventures with the Board for Missions. Now, the way it works, I think, is of interest to you. If an area secretary for World Missions defines a project or a program in which a missionary is involved, that is written up as a project proposal. The area secretary then submits that to the executive director of the Board for Missions. It has in the past, of course, been Dr. Westcott. Currently, it's Pastor O'Shoney. When that is reviewed, and if it is consistent with the policies of World Missions, then it comes over to our offices and lands first on the desk of the LCMS Director for World Relief. He reviews that project, and if that project is consistent with our social ministry criteria for project, he signs it. Then it comes to my desk, and I go over it one more time. And if it is a substantial sum, I sign it. And at that point, the funds are released to the Board for Missions to be used for that particular project in assistance and in cooperation with the work that a missionary is doing in a foreign field. Now, in part, the letter to which I referred earlier that came from Pastor Treglone involves precisely that kind of a function, because in that particular area we have, as is outlined here, identified a number of things that these folks are doing. No, I don't see it on my list. Let me talk about it anyhow. The list was prepared earlier. In any event, what this missionary asked for was funds to conduct a health care program which needed a nurse. Because he's so far removed and so remote, there are no public facilities available. And he told the sad story of a 16-year-old girl who suffered diarrhea, and for whom generally people say, well, if that's the way it is, you know, leave her alone, something, maybe somebody will intervene. Finally, she was so sick that they loaded her on a horse to take her out where she could get into a car and be taken to a hospital, and she died before they even got her to a car. That's not at all uncommon. As a matter of fact, the infant mortality rate is very, very great. It's 1 out of 5 before kids reach the age of 5 in countries such as the Philippines and in India, and in some places even higher than that. And if you ask, why is the population so great? Why are there so many children? It's because parents believe they need a lot of children because of the death rate that's likely to occur of their youngsters before they even get to the age of 1. So we're dealing with a massive health problem. And this particular missionary wanted a health worker, a nurse. And while I was there, they arranged to interview 9 different nurses whom they invited to come out to this community and whom then they took into the highlands where these services would be provided to a number of tribes. The purpose really was to take these nurses to see whether or not they could stand it to do this. And as a consequence, they went as far as they could with a vehicle. Then they had to walk 5 miles beyond that to get to where the people were that would get the benefit of their services. Of the 9, 2 volunteered that they were willing to do it. And I have a picture here, among other things, of the pastor's wife on horseback with the nurse who's going to serve those people in that place, in that particular community. That's a classic illustration of close cooperation between social ministry services and world missions. Look at the list. Botswana, drought relief, $60,000 for 4 years. Landlocked, north of South Africa, home of the Kalahari Desert. Missionary Robert Bartell is in charge of a food distribution center, a cooperative project of BMS and BSMS. Funds are used to purchase maize meal, sugar, and millet flour. The food is not simply handed out free, but all able-bodied adults who need food are enlisted to contribute their time and energy to village work projects. Discarded bones, cans, and bottles have been collected and piled near each of the 4 mission stations where food is dispensed. The refuse is sold with the proceeds earmarked for the purchase of additional relief materials. After the rains came and farmers were once again planting and harvesting their fields, the remaining funds provide assistance such as farming implements. Classic illustration spread out over 4 years, $15,000 a year, to this particular project in Botswana. Ghana, South Africa, West Africa, agricultural training project, $63,000 for 2 years. To support a farm manager to supervise the Christian Service Experimental Farms programs and personnel, and to provide scholarships to members of the Lutheran Church of Ghana for their participation in a 6-month training program at the farm. The training includes practical skills such as crop rotation, water conservation, and irrigation in village farming and agriculture to increase their ability to be self-supporting, to serve as leaders in their local mission stations and congregations. Nigeria, Fulani Evangelism, $271,000 over 5 years. Veterinary care and health care to meet the physical needs of over 100,000 Fulani people. You may have seen some things about this in the past, particularly when rinderpest was the great disease that was loose there, and through our common efforts between missionary Hector Ottemiller, Board for World Missions, Board for Social Ministry, we provided funds for inoculation of cattle so that these Fulani wouldn't be without resources. Next page, Themba Agricultural Technical High School in South Africa. $170,000, including $40,000 of special gifts. The first school of its kind for rural black children in the Republic of South Africa, accommodating 82 pupils, of whom 46 in grade 8, 18 in grade 9, and 18 in grade 10. This extends the existing elementary school and will enable the students who live in the rural areas to be equipped to remain in the area to help raise the standards of agricultural technology. Christian education is included in the curriculum. Goal is to provide facilities, including sleeping quarters, for 200 children. India, IELC, Backward Communities Development Program, $24,000 for 3 years. I visited with Dr. Ernst at some length. He's a capable professional medical missionary, if you will. And he's serving in a place where the Lutheran Church has had a mission emphasis for quite some time. Back in the early 70s, when Jim Mayer was the staff person under World Missions assigned to India, he lived in the house where I had dinner with Dr. Ernst when I visited his program and his projects. He's a full-time project consultant with 3 other field workers identifying needs for social and economic development in backward areas. There are stories here beyond what the language here asserts. But again, a marvelous Christian man, deeply concerned about the physical needs of people. No place where I traveled recently is poverty more severe than it is in India. And I have in my mental image a picture of a water buffalo that's so skinny it can hardly stand up. It's symbolic of what India is like. Symbolic because the men are all thin and the women are skinny and the water buffaloes look as though they haven't eaten anything in a month and a half. And so certainly in places like that, The physical needs of people, as well as their spiritual needs, need attention. Dr. Ernst understands the relationship between them and has done that well. Here's the one on primary health care in the Philippines, $20,000 for 2 years. Art Simmons and Don Treglone are the two missionaries involved. And I met with them and discussed those program components with them. In addition to the health care, there's also a literacy program that they have initiated, the purpose of which is to teach 300 adults and 600 children how to read and write the Kalagan language. This is not correctly spelled. It's Kalagan language. The novelty of that is Kalagan has six different dialects. You can't just simply translate English or the scriptures into one language. You're going to have to translate it into six languages. Remember that in the Philippines there are 67 languages. And if certainly it's difficult to create a culture in which there is coordination and cooperation when language differences exist, the immensity of that is Kalagan has six different dialects. You can't just simply translate English or the scriptures into one language. You're going to have to translate it into six languages. Remember that in the Philippines there are 67 languages. And if certainly it's difficult to create a culture in which there is coordination and cooperation when language differences exist, imagine what it's like if we had 67 different languages in the U.S. and had to deal with that. Or as in the case of India, where you have 1,700 different languages that you have to deal with. Now, the sense of unity of a society simply does not exist where there is that kind of language difference. But we deal with the realities as they exist and try to provide help. And simply, again, this challenge on the part of Mrs. Treglone to create a written language. There has been some preliminary work done. I think there are three little booklets that exist in Treglone, and that's certainly to get far beyond that and to make the scriptures available to these people in, first of all, one of the Kalagan dialects, and then five others. Sri Lanka, Concordia Welfare and Education Society, $35,000 for 3 years. The social needs which a Christian social welfare ministry in Sri Lanka addresses are varied and many. Mrs. Barbara Feeblecorn, the project director, promotes welfare, education, and relief programs and activities. The primary target group are the socially needy and disadvantaged, and any individual assisted will be considered an evangelism project. Bible classes and worship services are held regularly in all project facilities. Just a word about Sri Lanka. As you know, if you've read the papers, it's a society torn by civil war, by conflict between Muslims of different perspectives. Right again, off the tip of southern India, it's going to be a very, very major problem for a long time to come. We're there as a church, but we certainly could flourish much more effectively were peace to be restored to that part of the world. Guatemala, Centro Nutritional Luterano Concordia. Reverend Moises Mendez Martinez seeks to raise the spiritual level by developing a Christian education program. Between 100 and 300 persons, including children, are provided a balanced diet to overcome malnutrition, $6,000 for 1 year, maybe more to follow, I don't know. But certainly when you raise the nutritional level, when children become healthy, when they can survive, you create quite a different culture than if you anticipate that a large percentage of them will die in the first year of life and that a very large number also will die before they reach the age of five. The Weimar Ojusto Project in Mexico, $50,000 for 3 years. Try to help the Lutheran Synod of Mexico to establish a revolving fund for the construction of 10 homes in the Ojusco area of Mexico City. As you remember, Mexico City was badly hit by an earthquake several years ago, and social ministry under LCMS, Domestic World Relief, and with projects also for the Board for Missions, has now provided 250 living units. But the point is that may help with the restoration of some of the things that were lost in the earthquake, but there are additional physical needs in Mexico, and this is what that program attempts to accomplish. Long-term, low-interest or no-interest loans so that families can purchase materials to build their own homes. Their homes, on the average, cost $2,500 when they do it themselves. I wish I could buy a house in the USA for that kind of money. But the point, once again, is you can say to the to people that we understand your basic physical needs as food, clothing, and shelter. And this particular focus or emphasis on shelter is what this project addresses. Brazil, school program for orphans, 10,000 a year. Holy Trinity Institute in Moreira, I've been there. Martin Gedrot is the brother of the president of the Lutheran Church of Brazil. This is a very unusual facility. It involves both orphans and senior citizens, all under one roof, but in separate areas of the living area of this particular institute, Instituto Trinidade in Moreira, Brazil. It's a fascinating thing. We couldn't do it in the USA. Social policy would prohibit bringing senior citizens or an old folks home into that proximity with an orphanage. But it's amazing to see these kids in the orphanage seeing these senior citizens as parents or grandparents. And it's an amazing and gratifying thing to see these older people sitting there watching these children play. So it brings together people that are really transcultural as far as age and experience is concerned, but provides something essential for each. It's important for old people to see youth and to have a sense of being of importance to young people. It's also good for kids to know that there are some grandparents who still care for them, even if they have no parents of their own. Those are some of the programs that we support in cooperation with the Board for World Missions. And I simply wanted to share that with you because I think that it's important that you understand that the nature of our activities gets far beyond the domestic scene in being of assistance to people in need. Let me also share with you sharing. I have a few copies left of sharing from the September-October issue. Again, we try to convey to Lutherans around the country in our congregations what this church is doing with these funds that are contributed. Remember that these funds never come out of Synod's general budget. They come only because of separate fundraising activities. All the money we have comes because it has been raised in cooperation with the stewardship department. But Lutherans are warm and generous and responsive. I have to say that. I welcome the opportunity to say that. Because sometimes we're perceived as being kind of sour people who have a lot of problems. When I came to my job 7 years ago, sharing was a newsletter that was mimeographed, 30,000 copies of which were distributed every month, sent in bulk to congregations who requested it. This press run of sharing is now 285,000 copies sent only to congregations who have requested it and only distributed to them in that fashion. I know that it's available to you here through the mail services. I hope that you'll stay in touch with some of the fascinating projects that are involved. In this particular issue, there's a discussion of help for Mapuche farmers in Chile. We have no missions in Chile, but Lutheran World Relief Incorporated has 57 projects on the western slope of the Andes in South America. And every one of those projects constitutes a magnificent opportunity for mission work. When I met with the Bishop of Cajamarca in northern Peru several years ago, I said, well, Bishop, how are things going? And he said, oh, Dr. Lindsay, they're going very badly. And I said, why? What do you mean? He said, well, I have 32 vacancies in my diocese. And I said, oh, well, then what we ought to do is to send you 24 Concordia Seminary graduates each year. And he said, I'll take them all. It's a way of saying once again that the opportunities, the doors that are open, the chance to do that kind of work, the interrelationship between those areas in which we are involved present time and again endless opportunities to share the blessings of our Lord with people in great need. Let me see to it that each of you have a copy. I promised Professor Kapitsky that I'd allow some time also for questions that you might want to ask. But one of the ways, you may be interested in this, in which people have also contributed generously to this work has been through a process that we have adopted from the Mennonites. I always admire the extent of their concern and response to the physical needs of people. Wherever I go, whether it's in this country or elsewhere, if there's a tragedy of some kind, a disaster, the Mennonites are soon there. Again, I found Mennonites in Asia responding to the needs of people. But one of the ways in which they gather funds in that comparatively small denomination is through calendars which they distribute to the homes of all of their members. When I see a good idea, I have no compunction about borrowing it. I want each of you to have one of our next year's Lutheran World Relief calendars. I think I have enough, and if I don't, I have a sign-up sheet for anybody who wants one. We'll see to it that you get one via truck tomorrow. But once again, it calls attention to the fact that the needs are always there, and we say to people, particularly with our message on the back, share your love. At the end of a month, tear that month off. Put a contribution in it. Send it to us. And we will see to it that it accomplishes all of those objectives, all of those things about which I've talked with you here today. It's not so much the contribution as to keep the issue alive, as to say to our Lutheran people, the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, is a very good church. It is doing very good things. We have much over which we can rejoice, for which we can be thankful. We want all of us, all of you, all of the members of congregations, you as students, to share in that joy. Particularly at Christmas time, the message is clear. But the point, once again, is in every other month as well. It is an opportunity to share and to be part of the joy of giving, participating, of helping people, even as I have recited here for you this morning. Dr. Kopitsky told me also that I should talk briefly about domestic programs and projects. That's really a separate topic. Let me say simply, we have about 250 domestic projects underway at any one time in the USA in cooperation with Lutheran social ministry organizations and through and with districts and also with congregations. We make block grants to several districts who have extensive programs. We work with organizations as Lutheran Social Services of Southern California, now Southwest, Pacific Southwest. We have unique programs such as the Child Abuse Program with an agency in Cleveland. The range and diversity of food kitchens to abuse programs or anti-abuse programs is considerable. And that, too, continues to be a blessing for this church and to people suffering under those conditions. And again, it is a response, much as our mission statement says, to respond to every need that human beings have, whether it's physical or spiritual, as Jesus himself did in his ministry. So that's my message to you today. Thanks again for inviting me, letting me share with you the marvelous activities in which we as a church are involved. Thank you, Professor Kopitsky. Thank you, students, for listening so kindly.
We'll entertain questions at this time, if there are any.
Yes, I was wondering what cooperation there was between your board and the Board for Mission Services. You mentioned, for example, all this work that's being done in Chile, but no missionaries there, no pastors there. And my concern is, of course, that these people walk away thinking, hey, look, Lutherans, what a neat bunch of guys. Let's go worship our faith in God and say thanks for them. What is being done, or what can be done, to coordinate these efforts so gospel message and do receive faith in Christ and baptism and so forth.
The point is well taken, because through and with and under Lutheran World Relief Incorporated, which works outside of the U.S., even as we work with Board for Missions outside of the U.S., there are projects in many parts of the world where our church body has not yet appeared on the scene. And all I can say is that each one of these creates opportunities for things that are yet to happen. Well, that's why I've said, as I did here, every time that I monitor programs or projects, I always use it as an opportunity and feel sad because there isn't something that will follow after what I have said. But that still doesn't keep me from saying it, and it still doesn't keep us from responding to the needs of people and letting the Spirit work as best He can, even in the absence of people to bring the message specifically. So I say, down the road, you could double the population at Concordia Seminary and not exhaust the opportunities that exist as a consequence of the nature of the activities in which we are involved. I hope that those days will come. I can't predict that they will. I can say that our missionaries are pretty well strung out, that they have more than they can handle. But I also know that sometimes when that seed is planted, through other vehicles, through materials and resources, and through the area secretaries, always again, they can say to these people, do you know why we're here? We're here because we love the Lord. There may not be pastors there, but I have a very high regard for the area secretaries in World Missions and a very high regard for the staff people that we have in Lutheran World Relief to convey the message of who we are and why we're there. When we work with the Board for Missions, those basic decisions are made both by the area secretary and the missionaries. That's the easy decision to be made. When we work outside of the cooperative efforts with the Board for Missions, the area secretaries for Lutheran World Relief Incorporated identify those indigenous agencies that are most effective in providing needed assistance in a particular area. That is, we ask people there to decide what the needs are that should be addressed. And through them, then, the program is implemented. We also use yet another device, a larger corporate activity, to monitor those programs to make sure that the programs are carried out. With those programs always comes the message as to who we are and why we're there. But let me also raise a different question, one that I hear from time to time. How can you be sure that the resources ever get to where they're going? There was criticism in Ethiopia, particularly a French organization who argued, and it was reported in the Reader's Digest several years ago, that a lot of the food rotted on the docks of Khartoum and never got to Ethiopia where it was supposed to go. How do you make sure that it gets there? Well, one of the things that Lutheran World Relief, Inc. did several years ago was to buy 80 large Mercedes trucks and to put them down in Ethiopia. Now, you get the food into the northern provinces, Tigray and Eritrea, by trucking it in through riverbeds from Khartoum in Sudan. Now, when the food arrives on the dock, it's loaded on the trucks. There is a manifest. And the driver of the trucks accepts that manifest. And when he delivers that food into Ethiopia, and those bags of food are unloaded, any bag that is missing is charged against his wages. the food gets there. There's nothing to say that we can't be creative in developing mechanisms to assure that our purposes are achieved. And in meeting with some of the people in India, where we have a number of projects also where there are no particular missionary efforts. For instance, in Calcutta, in the slums of Calcutta, 300 registered slums in Calcutta. We use an outside agency to monitor our activities in a number of the slums where we have projects. I say we, through Lutheran World Relief. And in meeting with those people, one of my questions often is, which projects have you discontinued because they're not effective? That's a way of checking whether or not they're monitoring. And they usually have several that haven't done what should be done. And they are discontinued. I recognize that there's risk in what we're doing. But I also recognize that because there's risk doesn't allow us to refuse to do our responsibility of serving people in need. Now, one person has said it well. I'm not sure just who. But he said, our Lord certainly spoke the Great Commission, didn't he? The end of the book of Matthew, of making disciples. But he also spoke the great commandment, didn't he? That you should love your Lord and you should love your fellow man, and that the parable of Good Samaritan, of the Good Samaritan, is not in itself an expression of the Great Commission, but it is a marvelous expression of the great commandment.
Thank you. I'd like to just lend a little bit of a wrap up with my own testimonial or whatever, being engaged in holistic mission in New Guinea, where indeed not as a substitute for the proclamation of the gospel, but in a complementary role, we were involved in giving people relief from poverty and from disease and from ignorance and from illiteracy. We had everything from the introduction of vegetables to animal husbandry to evangelistic missionaries dispensing worm medicine for pigs. You say you love me? My pig is dying. Doing the gospel in ways that you might not think of when you're in the seminary. But the question is raised, are you creating rice Christians, or are you pouring in wine and oil rather than passing by on the other side? Talking about preparatory things, the story was told of how the cattle vaccine project in Africa caused an entire Muslim village to request a Lutheran evangelist and tell them about the God who, in great love and compassion, had caused them to have mercy on them and their cattle by bringing this vaccine and saving their herds. Preparatory, indeed. And also, I would see it as preventatory. When all of the sects came pouncing into the highlands of New Guinea, wanting to use our people as their target population, our people's response was, you want to come in here with a few words, you know? And here we have had demonstrated for us these many years with the Christian education, with the hospital, with the infant and maternal welfare, with the animal husbandry, with the economic development. We have here a mission that not only preaches Christ, but shows the love of Christ. Go on, get away. This was the response of the Good News Lutheran Church to those fly-by-night sects that, you know, hop in and try to do all kinds of mischief. So I have a big heart for holistic mission, if you want to call it that. But thank you again, Dr.